there. I'm Melissa Bowman for CKMS News on 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo. Thanks for tuning in to today's Waterloo Region Weekly Roundup, where I'll provide you with some updates from recent local council meetings. Now, that may not necessarily sound like the most exciting topic out there, but I'd encourage you to tune in for a bit, and I think you'll see how important some of these discussions actually are. In today's segment alone, we will dive into consumption and treatment services in Cambridge, proposed provincial regulations that could have a huge impact on the Grand River Conservation Authority and our watershed, and what's happening with the proposed police budget amid calls for reallocation. That's a lot to cover, so let's jump right in. Regional Council met on November 25th. Much of the discussion revolved around Cambridge Regional Councillor Jowett's motion regarding recent changes proposed in Provincial Bill 229 pertaining to local conservation authorities, including the Grand River Conservation Authority, or GRCA, of which Councillor Jowett is the current chair. Regional staff say the province is removing local municipal discretion on conservation issues. Councillor Jowett's motion essentially asked for the province to pause those proposed changes. Changes include viewing the watershed no longer as a whole, but as piecemeal, where cities can opt out of conservation initiatives. Those changes would impact the approximately 35 conservation authorities in Ontario. Here's what Mayor McGarry had to say.
So I'm extremely concerned. I think that I'm in full support of this as well from a governance issue. As head of council in a watershed, what concerns me is that the watershed is no longer seen as a whole. It will be a piecemeal approach to an incredibly important resource, as Councillor Jowett has outlined. So I worry that my fiduciary duty, which should be to the board at the GRCA as a director, would then shift to myself as a city, and I'm not sure that government's model really is works.
A recent Waterloo Region Record editorial on this issue states, the changes being envisioned would tip the balance of power in favor of developers over the conservation authority and of businesses over ordinary citizens who want to preserve their precious green spaces. Although watershed conservation and maintenance may not be something we think about often, it really is something that impacts each of us, especially if something goes wrong. In addition to providing spaces to explore and enjoy, it's home to a variety of plants and animals and provides water to us and our farmland. The GRCA also plays an important role in preventing and controlling flooding. As highlighted on the GRCA website, Councillor Jowett notes that in the Grand River watershed, the GRCA plays a critical role in protecting our environment and natural heritage, mitigating the impacts of flooding and other natural hazards, ensuring safe drinking water, and supporting municipal partners with Planning Act applications. This legislation introduces a number of changes that could remove or significantly limit the GRCA's ability to manage watershed natural resources and ensure people and property are safe from natural hazards. She encourages watershed municipalities and residents to contact their local MPP and asks that the province of Ontario work with conservation authorities to address our shared concerns before these changes are enacted. The Grand River Conservation Authority Board has deep concerns, which they outline on their website, stating that some of the proposed changes may have a considerable impact on conservation authorities, their watershed management responsibilities, and consequently on the health and wellness of the Grand River watershed and its residents. The GRCA owns approximately 50,000 acres of land throughout the watershed, and these proposed changes would limit the GRCA's ability as a landowner to appeal planning decisions and constrain their ability to support flood hazard management, maintain a reliable water supply, protect natural areas and biodiversity, and manage other environmentally sensitive natural lands. And development permits could now be granted in Ontario without including the important voice of our local conservation authorities. Mayor Foxton says it removes GRCA's ability to enforce existing regulations.
This is a major concern. So imagine now the enforcement is not allowed for the GRCA. So let's say that you report somebody dumping into wetlands. And starting to build into wetlands. And this is going to be allowed now, that people can actually build into wetlands. And the GRCA is not allowed under this new procedure to send their officers in to investigate and lay charges. So this is a huge, huge deal in everything that we hold dear. I don't know if it was my council or this council last week. Yes, it was this council saying we were going to support the program by the GRCA that gets farmers to ensure that their runoff doesn't go into our streams. Well, with this new program, doesn't happen. It's a terrifying bill in a lot of ways. And we really have to stand up for this. And we really have to fight. I'm really terrified of what's going to happen to our water.
This motion passes, and Councillor Jowett asked that all heads of council take this motion back to their own councils as well.
So I do have my final ask, and it is that you take it back to your municipalities as a head of council and at least put it on the floor, at least look at some way of communicating respectfully to the province in a way that can help them understand some of the dangers that we don't want to find out too late. And if you can urge the people in your communities to go to the website, look for the links and write to the people that can hear what they have to say.
Councillor Jowett would like to see these discussions happening at all local councils and hopes that more municipalities will ask the same from the province. Staff will also share the link to GRCA's website with more information, which you can see at grandriver.ca. The Waterloo Region Police Service, or WRPS, Police Board met on November 18th, and this was the first Police Board meeting they live streamed, which is kind of exciting as it allows interested residents to watch these meetings without having to be a registered delegation. The Police Board consists of 7 members, 3 from Regional Council, Karen Redman, Carl Kiefer, and Sandy Shantz. The other 4 members are Karen Schnarr, Ian McLean, Tony Giovinazzo, and Rosita Say. The meeting started off with delegations, of which there was only one, Sam Nabby, who spoke in support of Reallocate WR. Sam says perfection from the police and local councils is not required, but commitment to building trust within the community and follow up on community demands is expected.
We don't expect the police to do everything or to be perfect, but we do expect the officers serving our region to earn the trust of the communities they claim to protect, to behave beyond reproach, and to take ownership of past failings. We don't expect our elected officials to be perfect either, but when the region's largest ever mass protest demands fundamental changes to policing, we expect some follow-up. We expect the members of this board, especially those who also sit on regional council, to have had proactive conversations with Chief Larkin about reallocating funding to prioritize community safety.
Sam continues to ask some tough questions of the police board, including how the police thought a proposed increase of over $8 million is appropriate in this current climate.
Where is the leadership from this board and from regional council to guide the budget process? Why did police administration feel that it was appropriate to ask for an $8 million increase in the midst of a municipal budget crunch?
Of course, a conversation about police budget and possible reallocation is not complete without considering the root causes of crime and the role of upstream services. Sam dives into those issues as well.
Everyone here at this meeting knows that the root causes of crime and violence go far beyond the scope of policing itself. We know that vital services, like the Sexual Assault Support Center, have to rely on fundraising campaigns to meet payroll. The One Roof Youth Shelter has just launched a GoFundMe campaign to raise $850,000 for the first phase of a new supportive housing project for vulnerable youth. The region is considering defunding 5 child care centers to reduce the budget deficit. The IMPACT program, which pairs mental health responders to 911 calls, is severely underfunded and understaffed. IMPACT is only able to respond to half the calls where they're needed. While the police service is active in the community and helps raise awareness for several great causes, it's time to rebalance this financial equation and properly fund upstream services.
And lastly, Sam outlines a number of the calls to action from Reallocate WR and urges council to offer strong leadership in these areas.
And this brings me to the plan put forward by Reallocate WR. I won't go through all the details, but we demand that the region and this police services board act on the community's call for reallocation and reinvestment into community, social, and health services. And this is a transition that is urgently needed. We want to see expanded community health centers, greater transit access, a community safety model for mental health and harm reduction, supportive housing, and many other programs. Reinvestment in defunded and underfunded communities, social and healthcare services led by and for Black, Indigenous, and racialized communities will be a vital contributor to our community's ability to center our voices and co-create our futures.
Once the delegation finished up, the meeting moved into some presentations from Police Chief Larkin, and he introduced the community safety and well-being approach. Larkin said that he hopes this approach will help solve and prevent crimes by working with various neighborhood partners. This plan is based on the social determinants of health and focuses on those who may not require policing services, but the WRPS is the only organization available to help at that moment.
The Community Safety and Wellbeing Division is the largest change around our operational deployment. It's a new division, and it's focused on community wellbeing. This is really focused on the next 3 years of how do we transition as a police service from dealing with those that may not necessarily require policing services, but at 4 a.m, we're the only agency that's available. So how do we downstream, upstream, how do we divert, how do we actually look at different opportunities?
The neighborhood and community engagement strategy will identify long-term solutions which will help the WRPS answer why are we consistently in this neighborhood or area of the city, and help them, in Larkin's words, reallocate services and staff appropriately. This plan is meant to support vulnerable and marginalized folks where the judicial system is not the answer.
As I said, we end up dealing with individuals who are vulnerable, maybe marginalized, maybe at a difficult point in their life, where the judicial system is not the answer. In fact, a caring, compassionate community approach is the answer. It could be youth diversion, it can be adult diversion, it can be restorative justice. We can do business differently than simply processing everything through the judicial system.
Larkin mentions that the vast majority of policing needs fall within a square kilometer in the core. Many of the police calls are not about policing issues, and Larkin asks, how do we divert those calls? One example Larkin provides is changing police uniforms so they are less intimidating when showing up for people needing mental health supports.
Our recommendation, and the recommendation of our operational alignment team, is to use dedicated officers to work every single day with our mental health clinicians. Our recommendation and our movement into 2021, well, these officers will also receive specific training, enhanced training around mental health intervention. So the more than 6,000 calls that we go to a year, or almost 16 a day, they'll have specific training, they'll have a mental health clinician with them. They'll also wear potentially a modernized different uniform. And so we'll transition from the traditional police uniform to something that is more welcoming, which may not create the same challenges of the uniformed officer showing up.
Larkin says that you can't effectively just turn the tap off regarding funding, but you have to slowly blend the taps. He says shelter care and the consumption and treatment service sites are examples of how to do that well. He also says that there's a small portion of society who require police intervention and a larger portion who simply require care. While presenting this plan, Larkin has not addressed how the plan came to fruition. It's unclear to me if there was a process of community engagement or if it was developed completely in-house by police staff. The conversation moved to the budget, and Larkin says this is not an expansion budget. He references the population growth in the region and the resulting pressures on policing.
But I do want to reemphasize, we put a lot of effort into this. We've heard loud and clear the challenges we're facing. And I want to also be clear, this is not an expansion budget. This is an actual budget to maintain adequate and effective policing as we roll through. So,
at the previous police board meeting, the board asked the WRPS to come back with some alternative budgets with lower budget increases. Larkin presented 6 different options.
I recognize that these are challenging times in our community, in our province, our nation, financially. We're blessed as an organization that we've been able to mitigate and have cost avoidance and strategies. This is the second iteration. At the last meeting, the board did ask us to return with a variation of scenarios. You asked for 2 to 3. We've over-delivered with 6. Felt it was important to have a larger conversation and strategies.
These 6 options offered various budget increases ranging from 1.4 to 4.4%, which is less than the original proposed budget increase of almost $8 million. The police board seemed impressed with these 6 options and have asked the WRPS to more fully develop options 3 and 4, which have increases of 2.9% and 3.4% respectively. The police board next meets on December 16th at 10:30 a.m. Let's now move over to Cambridge Council, where councillors recently voted in favour of allowing a consumption and treatment services site in the city. There's actually quite a lot to break down with this discussion and decision, so let's start with a bit of history. In April 2018, Cambridge Council passed a 1-year interim control bylaw affecting the 3 core areas and adjacent lands within 500 metres and directed staff to undertake a planning study to examine the official plan land use policies and zoning bylaw regulations to be used in regulating supervised consumption sites. This study was paused in August 2018 when the new provincial government announced it would be reviewing the Supervised Consumption Services funding program in Ontario. After the provincial government announced it would continue with a new funding program called Consumption and Treatment Services, Cambridge's planning study resumed. The city's interim control bylaw expired in July of this year. The decision around a CTS site was to be made earlier this year, but council decided to wait until the council seat left vacant by the passing of Ward 7 councillor Frank Montero was filled. That by-election happened this fall and resulted in Scott Hamilton moving into that position. Mr. Hamilton has spoken about his experience knocking on doors during the campaign and the responses he heard around CTS.
And from my own experience, having recently been in a by-election and having knocked on thousands of doors across Ward 7, there were absolutely voices that were opposed. But there were a lot of voices that were very much in favor. So it's by no means a one-sided issue, and I don't think there's a majority anywhere. What I think there is in Cambridge right now is an open space for dialogue.
That brings us to this council meeting, which presented 6 possible options. Staff are recommending option 5, which allows a consumption and treatment services site to technically be built anywhere within Cambridge, though it's unlikely that would be in downtown Galt, and I'll explain more on why that's the case momentarily. Although option 5 does allow for CTS anywhere in the city, the recommendation does come with this caveat, that Cambridge Council acknowledges that they still have the opportunity to withhold a council resolution of support for a CTS site application under the provincial program for a site they do not support. There were 17 delegations registered to speak at this meeting. Many of those were in favor of option 5, although a couple of delegations were asking for an outright ban on consumption and treatment services anywhere in the city at all. Ruth Cameron from AQUA, AIDS Committee of Cambridge, Kitchener, Waterloo and area, sees consumption and treatment services as one method of connection and care.
We often say that care is the antidote to harm. And what I want to say is that life-sustaining connections can also happen at CTS. We need these connections to happen within Cambridge to save lives and as a resource for people to return to as needed, as one integral stage in supporting people who use drugs towards improved health and well-being.
In feedback provided in an online survey earlier this year, most respondents were opposed to CTS. As noted in the staff report, almost 250 responses were received to the online feedback form. The overwhelming majority of responses expressed opposition to a CTS site being established anywhere in the city. Many of the responses seemed to have the impression that a CTS site only provides a safe injection site, without the required wraparound support services, such as mental health supports and addictions treatment services, that the current Ontario model requires on-site or to have defined pathways to. A number of respondents to the survey also feel that CTS facilities are perpetuating drug use and not focused on rehabilitation. Of course, in the council meeting, several of the delegations, which included frontline workers and those with lived experience of drug use, disagreed with that assumption. One delegation shared her lived experience with drug use as a resident of Cambridge.
I personally felt as if the community blamed and shamed the addict for their disease instead of trying to find a solution to the problem. I found no help when I lived in Cambridge, even though I was desperate to be clean, but not knowing how or where to get help.
There were a number of responses that expressed concern about the safety of the community in proximity to a potential CTS facility in this survey. They were noting that distance between the land use considerations and a CTS facility would help mitigate negative impacts on the existing community and businesses. When asked about which land use designations would be most acceptable for the placement of a CTS facility, most survey respondents identified none of the above as their response. A number of respondents also selected that industrial or rural designations as land use designations they felt would be acceptable for a CTS facility. Many respondents indicated that they feel that CTS facilities enable and perpetuate drug use, are associated with increased crime, and they compromise community safety. A number of respondents also noted that they feel that CTS facilities are detrimental to communities. Many delegations at the council meeting, however, shared evidence in support of harm reduction and the successes with the Kitchener site. It's important to note that the opioid crisis has claimed 288 lives in Waterloo Region since the start of 2017. In the end, Cambridge councillors, with the exception of councillors Ermeda and Leggett, voted for option 5 that allows a consumption and treatment services site anywhere in the city. Now this decision allows the site selection process to begin and still gives the city the ability to approve or reject any proposals for a site. But where a potential site will be must still be decided. There are calls from some that it should be in the core, downtown Galt. Though it seems those calls are not coming from anyone on council. In fact, just the opposite. Here's what Mayor McGarry said.
I have heard loudly and clearly about where a CTS should not go. And you've heard council already support the fact that we don't support it in a downtown core near our businesses.
It's worth noting that if the provincial funding body believes a CTS site would not be well used, for lack of accessibility, for instance, they are unlikely to support and fund it. Which basically means that although Cambridge Council has, in theory, moved closer to seeing a CTS site within its city borders, if Council refuses to consider Galt as a potential location, it may be very unlikely to see consumption and treatment services ever come to Cambridge. So those were some of the major discussions happening at councils in Waterloo Region as of late. There are some more discussions coming up as well, including the final decision on the 2021 police budget and the regional council decision on whether to close the 5 regionally operated childcare centers. I'd love to keep this conversation going though, so feel free to connect with me on Twitter at m2bowman and follow at Radio Waterloo to stay up to date on all of the CKMS programming. This program is a part of the Local Journalism Initiative grant program and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Government of Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom.